Thanks for joining us. This is David Giard. I'm a technical evangelist for Microsoft, and I'm here with Brian Lewis. Hey, Brian.
Hello. Hello, David.
Now,
Thanks for
what's your
everybody watching
job?
us
I already
today.
know the answer to this question. What's your job?
I am an IT pro evangelist working on the infrastructure side of the house where you work on the dev side of the house.
That's right, and that's the reason why the two of us are here, because you're the infrastructure. You're like the garbage in, and I'm the garbage out, or maybe it's the other way around. I forget which, but we're two sides of the same
Well,
coin, I think.
you can't really run your stuff without my infrastructure, and my infrastructure doesn't do anything without programs to run on it. So
I
it
think
kind of
we're in
both of
agreement.
us.
They're both important. I think so. We were talking earlier. I think my perception is that PowerShell is something that infrastructure guys have been using for a long time, and developers have sort of been avoiding it. Is that a fair assessment?
It is and it isn't. Some people in the infrastructure side have been using PowerShell forever. A lot of us haven't. A lot of us have been sticking to the wizards and not doing the scripting side of it. But as they continue to evolve PowerShell, we're on, I think they're testing Gen 5 right now. It becomes more and more important, and it's able to do more and more inside Windows and all of our other services at Microsoft. So people are starting to really enjoy it and come to it.
Excellent. So I do think that developers are later than infrastructure guys to this technology, but I think they're starting to come around. I think developers are starting to realize the importance of PowerShell. Certainly, I am.
Yeah, I see that on the infrastructure side too. I mean, there's people that have used it for years, but then there's the rest of us, and I think everybody's starting to realize how important it is and coming to it and learning it.
But you're using it a lot, right?
I am, and it's actually an awesome language in the sense of if you look at other things that are out there, whether it's Python, it's similar to Python but better. It's object oriented versus scripting, and it's just a really a great language. We initially, when we built it, evidently, we wanted to have the best of, the Unix scripting world or the Unix shell languages, and then even better. And so they've done a great job, I think. I've
Cool.
built on .NET as well.
And so that's the other reason why it's you and I here, because your experience with PowerShell, and I'm kind of a newbie, and I reached out to you a while ago saying, hey, can you show me, help me get to automate some of these processes I'm doing in Azure. And your first thought was PowerShell is the best way to do that on Windows.
PowerShell is definitely, and even inside Azure, we've got the automatic services where you can set up automation. The automation should be done in PowerShell. So PowerShell, whether you're using it on your machine or inside of Azure, is definitely the way to do it.
All right. Hey, I'm going to share my screen here because I want to let other people take advantage of the same things that you taught me a while ago. Bear with me while I present desktop. And give me a shout out when you see my screen.
We're loading right now.
All right.
There we go.
All right, so let's start with these slides so people know who we are. This is me. There's my contact information. Easiest way to get hold of me actually is on Twitter, which is just at my name, David Giard. But check out my blog, check out my show. And this is you, Brian. Tell us about yourself.
Technology guy, geek. I've enjoyed science as well as tech for a long time. I have a blog. You can also reach me on Twitter at Brian Lewis underscore. But that's all off of my blog, so my thoughts on IT.com is probably the best way to find me and get the links to everything else.
Excellent. And I have one more slide here. These are the links to both of our blogs, but also a link to, we're going to go through some labs. Did you create these labs?
My team created these labs.
Okay.
Janelle Carruthers down in California created them.
All right, let's click on this thing here, and you'll see that it is a, let's see what it is. I think it's a Word document. Oh, it's actually a bunch of things here. So here's the
I'm not
Word
seeing it on my
document here.
screen yet, David.
Oh, you're not? Okay. Let's wait
I'm
until
still
it
seeing
catches
the.
up. Oh, you know why? Probably because I have to stop the slideshow presentation. How about
There
now?
we go. Something's changed
All right.
now.
Do you see the OneDrive?
Not yet. We're loading. There we go. Now I see it.
Okay, so that was this link here. Let me bring it back up. 1drv.ms/1js3hnx. And that just brings you to here.
Can
And on here, the.
you bring that up for another second just so that they have a little bit more time to take a
Okay,
look at that?
sure.
So, HTTP 1drv.ms 1js3hhx.
Okay, and
Does
what was your.
capitalization matter in that?
Boy, that's a good question. I do not know.
I know it does on bit.ly links, so I would bet it does on this.
Let's learn something right now, right off the bat. We'll go into here and we'll type in a lowercase j and see if it takes me to the same place. And it looks like it does not. So capitalization is important, kids.
Excellent.
All right. So we've
Good
already learned something just a couple minutes into this.
to know.
All
We
right,
both
so let me
learned
do that. And
something.
I will put a link to this in the notes for this screencast as well, so they can click on it without going to this point in the video. Let's see. We've got so the important things here, I think, are this Word document right here. Didn't realize that was
Yep, this is
gonna.
the lab guide.
This is the, and then we also have some of the snippets right here. These things are useful as well. But the main thing we're going to go through is this lab guide right here. And let's walk through lab one. In this session, maybe we'll just get through lab one, but maybe lab two. We'll see how fast it goes. Some of these things take a while to spin up. So, in fact, you're going to walk me through that if you don't mind. And as we're following along here, it's important to note the requirements, right? What are some of the things that we need before we get started, Brian?
Well, so we're going to need a machine that runs Windows.
Okay.
On that machine, we want to have an HTML5 browser with JavaScript enabled. And that's for Azure. As we work in the Azure portal, any modern browser works. We need HTML5 and we jo need JavaScript. Our latest Microsoft Edge browser, Chrome, Firefox, Safari, and even Internet Explorer, the old Internet Explorer, which isn't all that old yet, but
I'm
that
already
works as
calling
well.
it old.
Yeah, right.
Okay, what about software? Do I have to install any special software for this to work?
There's no software to install. We're going to use basically the PowerShell modules. So we're going to install some PowerShell modules onto our machine. And to do that, we need to be administrator of the Windows machine.
Okay.
But this will work on Windows 7 on up. All the supported versions of Windows will run this just fine.
Okay. All right, so that's all we need there. I think I have all that stuff. I actually have Windows 10. It's a preview of Windows 10. I'm not sure which build it is. And I have, I'm running Edge right here, but we can switch to another browser if we want to. I'm connected to the internet. I think I'm good here. I don't have actually, I have a small screen, but that's just the way life is. All right, we have this hands-on guide here, and I have an Azure account. Why don't I connect to that right now?
Sounds good. Yeah, that's
Azure.microsoft.com.
one of the things that's kind of important is to have an Azure account if you're going to do stuff inside Azure.
What if I don't have one? Can I get one?
You can certainly get one, and you can get a free one. So if you create a Microsoft account, or if you already have one, you go to the Azure.com website and do the trial. It'll basically have you sign up for the trial. It'll ask for a credit card number, but it will not charge it. It just is going to make it so that you can only have as many free trials as you have credit card numbers.
There's the free trial right there.
And once you create your free trial, you'll get is it a I don't remember if it's $150, $200. There we go, $200 or 30 days of usage, I believe is how they run it.
Okay. I think I've done this before. I think it's not going to let me because it knows that I've already got an account here. This is going to spin for a bit and then tell me, sorry. But if you don't have an account associated with this, yes, a free trial is not available to you, mister.
Yeah.
But if you don't have an account associated with this, with whatever you're signed in as, then you should not get that message.
And you only get one free trial on your Microsoft account as well.
Right.
If you want another free trial and you have another credit card, you can create another Microsoft account and create another free trial.
All right. So here's the portal. I just clicked on the portal link at the top of azure.microsoft.com, and this is actually important. This is the current portal, and there's another portal which I can get to here called the preview portal. Where is it? View, switch to
Yep,
Azure
down at the
preview
bottom.
portal, and that's over here, and that's a little bit different. So I think for the purposes of this, what do you want to stick in the current portal or move to the preview
Yeah,
portal? What's your preference?
we'll stick in the current portal. The preview portal doesn't have the ability to create networks yet, which is the first thing we're going to do in the portal.
Okay.
And so at some point, one to go with in the future. But as of today, production, there's just things we can't do in the preview portal.
Okay. All right. So let me just switch back to here real quick and look at the step ones. I think we got did all the. Here's lab one right here. So this is kind of what we're going to be doing. Building the foundation here. And you start off with this diagram. Can you describe what we're going to build?
Yeah, so the first thing to do as we build workloads in Azure, we're going to use this network. We need to create a network. So we're going to use Microsoft Azure as a data center, but I don't want to just have servers created and unable to talk to each other except over the internet. I want them on their own subnet. So we're going to create a subnet. In our case, we're going to take the 192.168.0 network space, and we're going to carve it up into two subnets. We'll have the 192.168.0 subnet with a 255.255.255 subnet mask or a /24. And then we're going to create another network that's the .11, so 192.168.11, and we'll have that address space with 254 addresses as well. So our idea is we've got a core front subnet and then an app back subnet. We're not going to really use the app subnet here, but we wanted to show that we can create multiple subnets. One of the ideas is that if you use this in production, is you may do a site-to-site VPN or a linked line to create this as just another data center for your environment. So just another site, as you would to other data centers you might have in your environment.
I see.
We call that the hybrid cloud.
Hybrid meaning that some of the stuff is that some of your servers are in the cloud and some of them are behind your firewall on premises.
That's correct. Yep. And in our case, this Azure, and we're not going to tie it to anything else. So we don't need anything else. But we're going to create a network first. Then we have to create storage, provision the storage space. Then we're going to create two servers within there, and we're going to create Active Directory servers. We'll throw Active Directory users inside AD. And then lastly, we're going to synchronize it to Azure Active Directory. So Azure Active Directory and Active Directory are actually different things. They are both based off of Active Directory, but your regular on-premises Active Directory, which we're going to build inside Azure, is able to have users and computers and that kind of stuff in it, where the Azure Active Directory is good for authenticating users and apps. It gets users in it, but it doesn't get your domain controllers. It doesn't get your workstations and that kind of stuff in it at this point.
I see.
Now, Windows 10, we're maybe going to change a little bit of that and let Windows 10 machines add to Azure Active Directory. We currently have today. So,
hey, you use the terms network and subnet. Are those synonyms, or what's the difference?
Well, so the network is the generic. That's the network of where machines run, and the subnets are basically how we're going to carve up the IP address space. And so when we do a subnet, for example, I mentioned the core subnet in the picture here, 192.168.10, it's going to go from, you know, .1.2.3.4 at the end, up to 255 is a subnet, because we've got a /24 on there. It tells us that we only get that space. So we can have basically 254 machines on that same segment that can talk to each other directly without having to go through a router. That's the subnet.
Okay.
In Azure, it's a little special as well, because you don't get all the address spaces. We reserve address 1, 2, 3, actually be a .4 address.
I see. So the /24, just to clarify, that refers to 24 bits, I think, because the 254 is 2 to the power of 24. Is that right?
So that's CIDR addressing. And I don't know how they came up with the 24 necessarily. There is a math behind it. But when they taught us IP subnetting back years ago, right, we didn't have CIDR addressing. We only had the subnet masks. And so that'd be 255.255.255.0. And then you look at how the binary bits apply there, and that's how you figure the stuff out. It's real fun, and it's not important. The part to know is that we get the addresses from 192.168.10.1 through 192.168.10.255.
Got it. Okay. All right. So in order to get started with this, we need to download some tools, right?
What we're going to do is we're going to work inside Azure, but we're going to use PowerShell to do it.
Right.
So we need the Azure PowerShell commandlets to do that. They're not in PowerShell by default. We add them to it, and we do that by running an install.
And that's on azure.microsoft.com, correct?
Azure.com, yep. And then you go to the Downloads tab in the middle. And then if you look down, there's SDKs at the top. But if we go down, we got the command line. There's actually a couple choices there. We're going to use the Azure PowerShell commands.
Windows PowerShell right here.
Yep. There's also the CLI commands, which are the middle one, the Azure command line interface, or CLI. And that runs on Mac, it runs on Linux, it runs on Windows. And so that is a command, one of those platforms you run on. And then there's the Azure copy, which is another PowerShell command. It's kind of like a robocopy, but to copy things up to PowerShell storage and down from PowerShell storage.
Okay. All right, so this is the one we're dealing with right here. I'll just point to there's documentation right here. I'll click on it right here to show that it exists and let people find it later on, explore. And then I'll go back and click on install. I've already done this, but what this will do, this will download an .exe file, I think. Is that right? I can't remember now. I'll click on it and see what happens.
Yeah, and the thing is you end up running this often in the sense of we keep updating the PowerShell commands. And so sometimes you run it again and you get new commands.
Oh, so I see.
It'll warn you, or it won't warn you. It'll tell you you're already installed if it's still basically run and install the latest and greatest.
Interesting. So this one actually named it with a parentheses 2. And I think the fact that the name of this file is Windows Azure PowerShell dot, and this number 3f3f.3fnew is identical to one that I downloaded and installed a couple of weeks ago.
Looks like you've downloaded it three times now.
Yeah, three times now. So that if it were a new version, it would have a new number in there. Is that correct?
I believe so.
All right. So I'm not going to install it this time. I've already downloaded, and I have all those things. But people watching online will have to do that.
It's just the next finish install.
Got it. All right. So once we have that, then now I could start using it. I could, for example, go to a command prompt, right?
Command prompt doesn't get to PowerShell. You got to do a PowerShell prompt.
Oh, I'm sorry. PowerShell prompt. And how do I do that?
Yep. Power and then clicking on PowerShell.
Oh, you broke up there for a second, Brian. Say that again, please.
Click on the start button and then just type power.
Just PowerShell right there. Look at that. There it is. Looks like a command line, but it's blue.
Yep. So now so one of the ways...
I have access to PowerShell commands right now?
That's correct. Yes, you do.
How would I list the PowerShell commands that I have? What's the...
Get-commands.
Get-command. I just want to prove that I am in PowerShell. Get-dash... Did I spell it wrong?
Maybe it's not commands. Get-modules. That's it.
Get-tab. Does that work? Oh, look at that. Get-mod. So I'm hitting tab here, and it's showing me all the things that are available. And then when I hit Get-module and press enter, now it shows me that I have some management, some utility, PS read line. All right. This is okay, but it's still command line. Is there a better environment?
There is a better environment to work with called the PowerShell ISE, which stands for Integrated Scripting Environment. There's multiple ways to get that to start. On some machines, it's hidden because if you don't have the administrative tools shown, it only shows the command there. But you can just type in ISE right now from the PowerShell command prompt, and it will start that.
Ah, nice. So I still have my command prompt down at the bottom, but I also have a little editor up here.
Right.
At the top.
And so that text editor may not show and won't show by default right away. You actually have to click View. And then select on there, if you view for me, the it'll be show script pane.
That one right there. Okay. So if you unclick that, it'll disappear. Yeah. Toggles it on and off.
Yep.
I see.
And then you put it back by clicking on.
And all kinds of things line up.
And so the nice thing about this special as well, you can type in get-modules up there. It's tab complete. It puts commands in different colors.
Oh, look at that. Autocomplete. I love this. This is great because I'm a newbie. And get that module here. Now, I didn't run when I pressed enter. How do I get this to run?
So there's two ways to get that to run. You can run the whole script by clicking the green arrow, but that will run everything in the script for you.
I'll do that one time.
You can also highlight the line Even if you just highlight the line, and you can highlight it quicker by clicking on the line number one, you don't have to actually try to find the code and do that. You just click on the number, it highlights that whole line. And then you click on the green arrow that's on top of the page, and that just runs the highlighted selection, or F8.
I see.
And so as we go through this lab, it's really easy to grab the code snippets, paste all of the code snippets into the text section here. And then step through the lab in that fashion.
Excellent. So I think we've got all the tools we need. We can start actually building stuff, right?
Well, yep, except you made one mistake.
Oh, tell me what mistake I made.
If you read the lab manual, we want to run PowerShell as administrator.
Ah, okay.
And the reason we want to do that is in lab two, we're going to do some remote PowerShell commands, and we basically need to pull a certificate down off of the servers we build so that it will let us and trust us. But I can tell by the command, yours just says Windows PowerShell ISE at the top instead of administrator colon PowerShell ISE. So you're running as standard user, not as administrator.
So let me close this and don't save anything. And can I do that in here?
I would actually exit from this. You could do a run as probably, but I would exit from there.
All right, so I'm going to right-click on this PowerShell ISE, and this time I'm going to say Run as Administrator. And I say, yes, of course I want to do that. That's why I clicked on it. And now I am administrator. Now I am all-powerful. I am
on. Now I see the administrator colon in the title window.
Here, there we go. All right. I feel the power, Brian. I hope it doesn't quit.
Excellent.
All right, let's do some stuff. Let's do some cool stuff.
All right, so let's get the scripts
loaded in there. All right, so I've got, get the scripts. I want to go to my, I'm going to close some of these windows here. I'll close the preview portal. I'll leave that open. I got $109 left out of my 250 MSEN scripts. Are you talking about these scripts here?
Yep, so it's the code snippets.
For Labs 1, this one?
Yep.
So I'll click on that. Labs 1 and 2, okay. And here we go.
Just
okay.
Highlight all that text and cut and paste it. Just do a Control A.
The whole thing, all right.
Yep, we're going to take the whole thing
paste it in here?
Put that into the, yep.
All right. And let's real quickly, just these, anything that starts with this pound symbol, that's a comment, right? So that will not get executed.
That's correct.
And anything that's in blue, that will get executed. That's a command.
Right.
What about these red things?
Red things are variables.
Okay.
So anything that's dollar sign something is actually a variable.
Is that required? Is dollar sign required in variable names?
It is in PowerShell. That's how you designate a variable name.
Okay. And it looks like string literals are kind of dark red.
Right.
Anything else in there?
And so the interesting thing there is programmers will catch on to this real easy. It's us IT pros that kind of have a problem with that sometimes is – and line 18 there, that dollar sign subscript name equals free trial. Not only does that instantiate the variable, because the variable doesn't exist yet.
Okay.
But it'll instantiate it, and then it will fill it. So, for example, if you go down to the PowerShell box for a second and type write dollar sign sub.
Dollar sign sub. Yes, yep. So it's not showing up here.
Yep, it doesn't do IntelliType there. It doesn't have it listed because it doesn't exist yet. But if you erase that, go back and run line 18.
And then I could do what you told me already. I could do this right here, or F8.
Yep.
And there, now I've run it.
Right. And now that same write command.
Write.
Dollar sign.
SUB, look at that, there it is.
Look at that.
And then if I hit enter, it shows me that free trial is, in fact, the value in there, which isn't surprising. All right, and then here you've got an inline comment. It's worth pointing out here that there's a comment at the end of the line. So nothing after this is this ignored
it
by
doesn't
PowerShell,
run, right.
Basically.
It's but it's trying to highlight and run. It doesn't, because the pound sign, you know, makes it a comment, so it won't run, even if it does get back.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So you can highlight the whole blocks of sections and not worry about the the documentation or the comments.
I see. Should I do that now?
Well, we're going to make some changes there to those
Oh,
variables
yeah, I
first.
see some XXX in here. How about up here? So we should probably get started with step one, right?
Yeah, why don't we start with step one there? We
All
got to
right.
tie your basically your PowerShell window to your Azure account because we don't want to have to pass login name and password all the time and all that. What we're going to do is we're going to tie the subscription that you're using inside Azure to your PowerShell window by the add Azure account command.
Okay, I'm going to do that right now. I'm going to press F8 this time. And a window's popping up, I notice.
Yep,
which
and have you authenticate?
Authenticate here. And now I put my password in, which is PASSWORD. Not really.
And if you use multi-factor auth, that will list up in there too.
Okay. And now I know it's done because it's listed something here. Okay.
Yep. And now your machine is your PowerShell window is tied to that subscription. Now the commands we execute will execute against your subscription.
All right. And it could be that I have two different accounts, right? At one subscription,
you
I have
can.
Two tenants here. What does that mean?
Well, first off, you just deleted stuff in your text window above there.
Control Z, got it.
All right, and so you can have multiple subscriptions, and when you have multiple subscriptions, what that lets you do is choose between them. So when I want to issue commands against another, I select that subscription.
I see.
You could even use my subscription in there, right? It doesn't have to all be tied to you or, you know, a certain username.
Wouldn't I need your password though to do that?
Yeah, or my certificate, you know, that certificate that ties your account together right now. If you had that, that would work as well.
I see. Somehow I'd have to get some permission from you, something from you.
That's
to
correct.
Get that authority.
And I wouldn't give you that in that way. What I would actually probably do is just assign your user ID as a user of my account, and give you, you know, full admin access. And then it would be you'd have the one subscription, but you'd be able to work on my subscription as well because you'd be a full admin of mine.
I see.
Anyway, the way to choose your subscriptions are you list out the different subscriptions that are tied to your account,
okay,
and then you choose it. And so we're going to do that next line of get Azure subscription.
Okay.
And what we want to use that for is to fill in the variable for your subscription down below.
Okay. Tell me about this little pipe symbol, that vertical line there before we get started. What does that mean?
That's a pipe. That pipes the command or the result from the first command into the next command.
Okay.
And so here we're getting subscription, and if you just type get subscription and not the rest of it, you'll get a lot of information. And what we're doing is we're going to filter it down to just the piece of subscription name and just pull that part out.
I see.
And when Azure runs, it's not just passing text, right? It's actually passing objects.
Okay. Well, let's run it. I'm going to press F8 right now. I'll get a list of subscriptions, and I'll filter that by subscription name. So I'm only seeing the subscription name. I'm not seeing all the values of each subscription.
Right. And that's actually all we want. So your subscription name is Giard, and that's what we want to put in that variable. Right now it says free trial, and anybody running the free trials will probably say free trial. Yours we want to change to Giard.
Okay. All right. And then here are just the locations. Let's do the same thing again. F8 on that one.
Yep.
And these are the locations that are available to my subscription.
Right. And these are the data center locations. So there's multiple data centers in a region, but these are the regions. So you can choose where your workloads are going to build. You want them to build in the East U.S., the West U.S., Brazil, et cetera.
I see.
And, the lab manual says choose whatever data center is nearest you.
Okay.
You can do that. You can choose if you have friends on the West Coast and you want to choose West, go ahead and choose West. Or to the variable, because if you look at these variables in red, Those are the only parts that we need to really change or update in
I
everything
see.
we do here.
I see. And some of these are literal strings, so it's important to know the proper spelling of, for example, East US or the name of my subscription.
Right.
So let's do that right now. So subscription name, I'm assuming subscriber name refers to that, not free trial. I want that to be GR'd, and that's I knew that because when I did a get Azure subscription, it spelled it out for me. There's one called GR'd.
Yep.
That's and the exactly storage right. account name I haven't yet created, so
right.
I'll call this one. Let's say, how about what are we going to call it? Does that have to be unique across all?
Well, so there's a couple
Azure?
Things here. One, if you read the manual, it says, you know, in place of XXX, use your
initial. So I could do DJG, something like that.
Right. As long as it's unique. As long as nobody else has done DJG store. Right. So I recommend, like, your initials and a number. Pick your favorite number. But they do have to be unique.
I will do that. The reason is because I did these labs a couple weeks ago, and I think I may have created this already. So let me do a new one.
On the account, it's all lowercase. That's another thing. On other areas, we use uppercase, like a network name and stuff. We'll use different cases, and that's fine. The storage account has a couple criteria. One, it's got to be under 15 characters, and two, it's got to be all lowercase.
I see.
And it's got to be unique because that's going to be a DGR store, you know, dot Azure storage dot net or something. I don't remember what the
right. It's
cloud storage dot net.
Create a URL that'll be part of that URL. Okay, or a URI, I guess,
right.
is what it is.
The URI, yeah, and that's why it's got to be unique.
Got it. Okay, so I think these are good. I've got I'm going to create a storage account called DJG One Store, and then it'll be a domain cloud service called DJG One Domain Service, and then there's an availability set, DJG One DC set, and a couple of domain controllers, DJG One DC O2, DJG One DC O1 and O2. Okay. And what about these here? And these have to match what you configured for your network in lab one. Oh, we skipped something. I skipped a step. So we actually need to go to the portal to do something.
We are going to go to the portal and create a network.
Okay, we're going to call that
to
DJG1-VNet just to be consistent.
Yep.
All right, so let me go back
and then
over
you've
to
got West US in here already.
Do
you want to stay on West US?
I don't know. Where are
right.
we right now? You're
then
in Milwaukee and I'm in Chicago. Where, are we in the east or are we in the west?
We're in central.
Central's not. Oh, there it is. Let's do central then. All right. And that looks good. Core subnet's probably fine. All right. So let's go back to the portal.
All right.
Here, I think. Yep. And we want to go down to the
networks tab.
Networks, which is pretty low, as I recall. Right there, networks. And you can see I've been here doing labs before, but this time I'm going to create a new network.
You're going to do a custom create.
Custom create. All right. And I want to name it what I called there, DJG1-VNet, I think is what I was going to call. Let me go back and verify that.
Yep.
DJG1-VNet. I don't know if it's case sensitive or not, but just to be safe, I'll do that. And I'll put it in the central US. All right. And there's my next.
And that's important, right? Because you have to put your storage in central now. You have to put we're putting our network in central. We have to put everything in the same spot. Otherwise, you know, they can't work together.
Okay. Now we're going to create some DNS servers, right?
Well, we're not going to create the DNS server. We're basically creating the when we do a DHCP, we wanted to hand out, here's where you can find your DNS server.
Hmm.
So that's what we're configuring.
I see. So we're going to tell it where it is even before we create it.
That's correct.
All right.
Because our DNS servers are going to be our domain controllers.
And that's what these right here? Is that right?
Yeah. So, but we're going to create that DJG DC01. That's the server.
Let me just copy it. So this right here is one domain controller that I haven't yet created. And then I need an IP address.
Yep. And so that it's going to be our first server we create. So I know it's going to get the first address. So that's going to be 192.168.10.4. 192.168.
Oops.
You got 169.
All right. Do we want a second one here?
We could. We could put the DC02, but we don't really need to.
Okay, let's just leave it as is then. All right. We're not going to configure a VPN right now, right? We'll just do next.
Right.
All right. Next.
Yep.
Looks like we have one subnet here.
Well, so we need to change that.
Let's change that, yeah.
We need to change that. So we're going to go up there and select, actually before the subnet, we need to change the address space.
Oops, what
address
happened?
Space?
What did I just do wrong?
Did you hit the back button?
I didn't think I did. Maybe I hit escape, or maybe I clicked away from it. And it doesn't show up here, so I'm going to have to do it again, I guess. All right, this is a good time this is a good time for a quick review, I think.
That's exactly why we're doing this.
1-VNet. Central U.S., that's good. This was right there. And then 192, I said, 192.168.10.4, I think you said, right?
Correct.
And that's all good there. All right.
Next. Make sure you don't hit the back button.
I don't know what I did wrong. I may have clicked over here or pressed escape.
So we're going to click on there, right, and we want to change this. So that starting IP address, click in that space.
Right here, yeah.
Yep, and you're going to basically type... are we doing...
Let's go back to here, actually.
192.168.0.0.
192.168.0.0, okay.
Yep. Because we're defining the address space.
192.168.0.0 and /16 is what we want. And that tells us here, that's from 0 to 255.255. All right.
Yep. And now we're going to go down to subnet 1.
All right.
And we want to change the name of subnet 1. We want to call that one, what did we call that?
Is it in here?
It's in the directions here. I'm looking for it.
Subnet 1.
Core subnet, core-subnet is the name we gave it. It's
core-subnet.
Yeah.
And page. My pagination might be different from yours, so.
Okay. Well, let's go back. And it's actually...
Here it is, core-subnet. Right there.
Yeah, but it's our direction. That's not the directions. The directions are actually at page 5 or 4 for you, where we're at, right there. Yeah,
starting down here, and then the portal. Oh, we're in the portal.
So you go down below the
right here. Here's
our graphic
up there, and we just did that /16. Here's the subnets right here. So we're on step 9 right now.
Right.
Oh, you're right. Top of page 5. Okay. All right. So and then. This is nice, so I can just copy and paste that. 192.168.10.0 for that, and I want that to be /24.
Yep.
Right there. And over here it's telling me what that means. All right. So let me add that.
Right.
And then this is the other one we're not really going to use in this lab, but we'll just create it up just to be nice.
Right.
What was it? App.subnet, I think?
Here, app.subnet.
App.subnet. Let's grab that. app.subnet, and this one is going to start just after the other one ends, and it's also .24.
And there we go.
Click add.
Now you're good.
Now we're good, I think.
Nope.
Do we not want to add this? Okay, so this is auto added. Right now it's already added.
There you go.
Okay.
Now you're going to hit the checkbox at the bottom, and we're going to create it.
Now we're done with this section anyway. And creating, I don't think this takes very long to create as I remember.
30 seconds, maybe, if that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this is the only stuff we're doing in the portal today, and we're going to do the rest from the command line. Now, we could do everything from the portal. The command line is going to be faster.
Okay.
And
So,
it's nice because we can script it and create and have recreatable stuff then in the command line too.
right. And we could, that was really that's the reason I reached out to you the other day, is because I'm doing a lot of Azure demos, and I find myself manually creating these environments and then having to remember to manually tear them down when I'm done so I don't get charged for them. And I really wanted to script that out to make it easier to set up consistently and not make mistakes, and to make it easier to save money afterwards when I'm done.
Yeah, there is a script you might be interested in which will delete everything in your account.
Everything in my
But
account.
you have to be careful with that one.
Yeah. The scorched earth approach to clean up.
It's kind of a reset, factory reset.
All right, so I just created this one, but I just realized I called it DJG and not DJG1. So that's slight error, but that means I have to, I won't say it's an error, but now I'm inconsistent. I have to go back here and
Yep, we're just going
change
to update your
this
variables and
right
then we'll
here.
be fine.
Right there. Okay. Is there a way, actually, just out of curiosity, I wonder if I could change that after the fact. Some things can be changed afterwards and some things cannot.
Some things can, some things can't. A lot of stuff has to be.
It looks like the name is key, and so that cannot be changed. I don't see a
Yeah,
way to.
I know on the tests, for getting certified, one of the questions is how to, change a complex network. And the answer basically is,
Delete it and start over?
well, export it, right? Export the file to the XML, make the changes to the XML, delete it, and then import the XML and create a brand new one.
So the answer is there's no way to actually change something. You have to delete it and create it,
That's
but you can ease that
right.
process through some export and import. All right. Looks like we cannot change that. So I just changed the what I call it in here. All right. Let's go back to our labs here. And now we're in PowerShell. So we're going to go. We did this already. We actually downloaded the tools from the portal. We went through add Azure account. Did we do that one? I can't remember now.
Yep, we did the add Azure account.
Yeah, we did all this stuff here. That prompted us for a login. We did a get. Let's make sure our. I noticed there's some things that start with add and some start with get. So sometimes you can guess what a command is going to be if you know the rules of how PowerShell is named, right?
Right, yeah, PowerShell has a naming convention of verb dash noun, so get dash VM image or get dash Azure VM. The other things is you can also set things that you use, like maybe you like to use DIR, right? And that's already built into it. You can set aliases.
Okay.
So when I had us do a write command before, that was actually aliasing another PowerShell command that was the verb dash noun, and I can't remember which one it is because I always use
Okay.
write, but
Yeah, but I'm going to guess the verb was get dash something because there's only a few verbs in here. Add, get, set, delete. In fact, you can see them over here, actually. This little thing tells you. Disable, there really just aren't that many verbs. Enable, I mean, out of all the PowerShell commands, export, a lot of gets, a few, here's a few off one-offs. Move and measure and things like that. But by and large, new, tons of new dash something, a bunch of remove. Oh, I said delete, but actually remove is the convention. Select, set. There's a half a dozen verbs that are used in most of the PowerShell commands. And that's helpful because you can start typing here. If I know I need to add something, I can just start typing add dash and start tabbing through all the add. If I know it's add dash Azure something, I can start typing through that, tabbing through that.
yeah, and if
There
you
is.
want the parameters too, that help section, as you select one of them on the right side there,
Okay.
it actually shows you the options and you type them in. So just select one of those commands.
So I'll go down to the Azure thing here. So if I want to do add dash Azure endpoint, I'll select that. And then it gives me a brief detail
If
about
you
what it is.
show the details,
And I
is
click
that?
show details. And now what do
So
I
then
get? These are
those
the
are all the
parameters.
possibilities of the parameters, and if you fill them in, import it or run it, right? it'll put it with all the switches in the right spots.
Interesting. Okay.
So it helps you build the command.
The stars are required, is that right?
I think so. I think that's what a star means, is required field.
All right, this is very helpful. All right, I won't do that. Well, I'll just, for giggles, I'll say insert, and then it did that right there. It put my parameters in like that, but I don't want to run that command. I think that's a command that reformats my hard drive, so. Go back to here. All right, where was I? We're down here, and we did all these variables here. So we're at the variable section. I think we were done with the variables. I sort of jumped ahead early on. Those look good. Those look good. What about down here? Server name equals. Oh, here's one. Here's a dynamic one. So we're not hard coding something. We're saying get Azure VM image. This gets what? All of the Azure VM images. And we're going to pipe that to some filter to where only show me the ones where the image family equals Windows Server R2 data center. And then once we get that list, we're going to sort it in descending order by this property, the publish date property, so we get the newest ones, which
there
presumably the ones with the latest version of Windows Server 2012 R2. We'll get that, and then we're going to just pick the newest one, right? Is that the idea?
That's exactly what it's doing.
Okay.
Yep.
And then we'll instantize.
It's really nice to work with a programmer on these, as opposed to an IT pros. Yeah, I mean, you get that better than I get it, right? I mean, that was a great walkthrough.
I started this. I'm this all brand new to me, but it sort of makes sense. I really like this. And then I like the instance size is small. We're going to use that. That makes sense. We're just doing demos here, but maybe you can go up to and the small is the cheapest one. Is there an extra small? It might be an extra small.
There is. There's so small is going to be a one core. There is an extra small with that. It shares a core.
All right. And then username and password. These look like a fine example of a secure password right there.
Yep.
Pass. Notice how they sort of substitute the zero, the O with a zero. You'll never figure that one out.
You're welcome to change those, but if you change those, make sure you record that you change it so that when you try to log in, you can remember how to log in.
I've been there. And then we're going to select. Okay, so these are the variables right here. Let's run all these. I think that'll be good. I'm going to highlight them all. Right there, and then I'll press F. Or actually, I'll click this button right here, just same as F8, and then it just runs them, and they run pretty quickly. Except for I think the one that actually had to do a get Azure VM image, that had to go out to the cloud and find some stuff. But still, it was just a few seconds. So now everything has been done there, and now we can say things like write $. What was the one that was dynamic $ image? How about that? I'm curious what we get for that. So that's this. I didn't pick that name, but if I were to pick one, that's probably
the one I would
have picked.
At least today. But tomorrow there will be a newer one, possibly, so that's why it's nice to have a dynamic one.
Yep. Cool.
And in 4 or 5 months, that image name won't be valid anymore either, so to hard code in into your scripts, you don't want to just hard code in the standard image, because these are our standard images. This isn't an image that you or I uploaded, right?
Right.
We can upload our own, and then they won't change. But off the standard images, we're going to keep patching those at Microsoft. And so we'll get rid of the old ones at some point.
Yeah. I noticed that's for the Windows machines. We're patching them. Do the Linux machines, do those get patched and updated as well?
You know, I haven't been looking at those images to see if they do get updated. I would think they would.
I just recently discovered, this is an aside, of course, but I just recently discovered the VM Depot. Which is, I think it's all Linux images. There might be some Windows one in there as well, but there's just a bunch of images that the community has created that you can just tap into and use.
Yeah, it's all open source images, so there's no Windows images in there because Windows isn't an open source.
Ah, I see.
But yes, it's filled with not only the images of the Linux OS, but packages and that are open source on top of that. If you're looking for WordPress or Joomla or whatever other type of installs, there's thousands of them.
Yep. Very cool. All right, so now all we've done is just set some variables. We're not actually using those. We can actually use one right here. And here we're going to select an Azure subscription, the one that we assigned above, which I think was GIARD.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll press F8 on that one. And now, and by selecting it, it didn't really do anything. I mean, nothing really appeared down here. But it just says going forward, anything I do is going to use that subscription, right?
Well, Well, you have to hit, did you hit run on it?
I did. Yeah, so you can see it down here.
Or F8. Yep. Okay, there it is. Yeah, it didn't return anything, but yes, it did select it.
Okay. So now that means that, like, the forward, these commands here, they're going to assume the description I'm using is the GYARD subscription.
Yes.
All right.
And if you look at what they're doing.
Oh, let's look at it. Let me see how I figure it out here. So new, I'm going to create something new, and the new thing will be a storage account, and the name of that storage account will be this right here, which I think it's called DJG1 store, something like that. Mm-hmm. And the location will be central because that's the variable. So let me just do that. I'm just going to create a brand new one here, F8 that. It went to the cloud, so this one takes a little bit longer.
Yep, and so actually, what we're doing is we're provisioning a storage space.
Yep.
And that's where we can store items. No different than if you would have done it from the console.
So actually I could go back here to the portal and go up to storage right here. And when that's done, I don't see it yet, but when it's done, when this comes back, I should be able to see one called...
There.
It doesn't do me the name here, but I happen to know the name is DJG. I'll tell you what, I'll do this. Write $ storage. Oops. $ storage account name, and there's DJG1 store, and the location name is Central US. So if I refresh this, I should see a DJG1 store in the central region.
Yep.
Eventually.
When it returns.
All right, here it comes. I threatened to go away, and that's when it started coming back. You got to be firm with these things. Okay, their DJG1 store is right here. The second one, and you can see that it is in the central region. It was created for me just now. Very cool. I love this stuff. Brian, this is cool.
This is cool stuff.
All right. So next thing we're going to do, we're going to build an Azure, a cloud service. We call this something DJG1 service. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Let's see. So we did the new Azure storage account. Did you
I did not do this. I'm sorry. So just creating it isn't enough. Now I want to set it. And this, again, this is just... This doesn't really do anything by itself. I won't have any output, except it'll just change the default. Anything I do going forward that requires set Azure subscription, or will it? I'm not sure. What does this do?
We actually set the current storage account there. So we're doing is we're keeping the same subscription.
Yes.
So we're not changing your subscription, but we're going to specify that another parameter in the subscription is that it's going to use this storage account. Because you had multiple storage accounts in there.
Yes.
Right?
I have a bunch of them.
But we want to work on this one.
Got it. There's storage. Okay. All right. So we're going with that one. So now when we create a cloud service here, new Azure cloud service, I'm going to go over here to my cloud service, which is right there. And I have a few of them already here, but I'm going to create a brand new one here. Hit that F8 button up there. And it goes out of cloud. I created one here. I think I called it something like DJG1 service. So when I refresh this, some of these have a little refresh.
Back. Instead of hitting refresh, try switching away and then coming back. I think
it'll be faster,
go,
I think.
Quicker. Yeah.
If I do, let's see, go into here and then come back out again, maybe? That didn't work.
Quick on mobile services and then back down or something like that?
No, that did not work.
No.
It's caching too much. And the reason it's caching a lot is because it's kind of slow to come back on the portal.
Yeah. I was trying to avoid the refresh because the refresh does take a little bit of time.
Yeah, sometimes there's a little button. Some of these services have a little button at the bottom that says refresh, and that just does some JavaScript and only refreshes part of the page, which is nice. But I didn't see that for the cloud services. But there it is. It's called DJG1 Domain Service. It's right here, and there's even a URI that is associated with it. So that's what I did. I just did that one. And now we're done with lab one. Let's take a break
lab
right
one
now.
Lab one is set.
Right now. And just review what we've created here. I'm going to go back to the portal. We did this all in PowerShell. And we've created, we didn't do all in PowerShell. We manually created this virtual network right here. and it was the this one DJGV net, and then we've through PowerShell we've created a couple of things. We've set it to this to my account right here. We're going to use this subscription, and we created a storage account right there in the central region, and then we've also created a cloud service right here.
Right.
Awesome. Let's take a break right now and we'll come back.
Sounds good.
Thanks, Brian.